Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want to come and join with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore! It's Dunk!
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do!
I'm the Joker, baby!
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 73 of season 2. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Chris Castellani, Gooch. It is Oscar nominations Tuesday when this releases. We are recording on Monday. We're going to release early Tuesday afternoon after the Oscar nominations come out. We'll do a little quick little recap. Also an interview with Rian Johnson, talking about his new series, talking a little bit about Glass Onion as well. That was a fun interview. Did we talk about Star Wars? We'll see.
You'll find out.
Maybe you have to listen to find out. And then we'll be talking about Plane today, the new Gerard Butler movie, and The Last of Us. All exciting things. But first, this episode brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh. It's the new year. It's actually later into the new year. Maybe your New Year's resolutions, your goals are shit. HelloFresh. I don't think I'm supposed to say the word shit. But you know what? They're going to be okay with it. It's going to be a good ad read. HelloFresh help you to achieve those. Grocery stores are tough, especially this time of year. Especially living in a cold weather city. Got to get all the ingredients. It gets expensive depending on where you shop. Time, money, budget, all that. HelloFresh going to fix that for you. Their festive fare collection, they got limited time recipes made with seasonal produce, premium proteins, fish, chicken, all that. Get out of the post-holiday slump, pretending that you're going to do anything about your New Year's resolution. Get healthy, get right, spend better. Over 35 weekly recipes, they have the options you're looking for. Calorie smart, carb smart, you can customize whatever you want on HelloFresh. Make sure you go to HelloFresh, HelloFresh.com/lights. Also use code 22. Lights 22 free meals plus shipping, 22 free meals plus shipping. That's what you get, but go there. You can see what they have offering. They offered up a couple ones to us. We tried them out, got bibimbap. These aren't like, you know, it's not just chicken and rice. You're getting some nice, different, unique dishes. Bibimbap's the thing that I only ever see on Chopped on Food Network. We want to save time and money. Guess what? HelloFresh doing that. Cheaper than grocery shopping, 25% cheaper. Cheaper than takeout. Takeout in a city, you get like two tacos from like a fast food place, like $40. HelloFresh.com/lights22. Use code lights22 for 22 free meals plus free shipping. That's lights22 at HelloFresh.com/lights22. Get some good, cool, unique dishes. Add some Brussels sprouts. It's delicious. It's good stuff. Good portion size too. HelloFresh. All right. Thanks. To HelloFresh. I got to read a tweet before we go. Ken Jack has seen this tweet. This is from CEO of AMC. It's from last week. It's a very funny tweet.
One of the great tweeters among all CEOs.
He is. Which also, his Twitter is one of the most engaged with on the internet because of AMC being a meme stock. Yeah. his tweets yesterday had 336, 264, 393 replies separately. And it's all like just, you're the man. And it's like really like positive, like, yeah.
What's his name?
Adam Aaron.
Yeah. Great name.
This is from January 19th. CEO of AMC. AMC Perfectly Popcorn is half price all day today at all our U.S. theaters in honor of National Popcorn Day. See a movie tonight. I recommend Avatar The Way of Water, Megan, A Man Called Otto, Puss in Boots, Plane, The Fablemans, The Menu, and Black Panther Wakanda Forever.
So every movie that's in theaters.
Every movie.
I recommend every movie that we are showing in our theaters. But we were wondering, what did he leave out? He left out at least one or two smaller movies for sure.
There had to be some.
Women
like
talking.
Yeah. Oh, fuck no. That's not getting the recommend. No way.
Don't see women talking. Don't go.
Whatever you do, do not see women talking or any on. Well, there's another woman something too. No, fuck. What movie is that?
He also called it The Plane.
Not The Plane.
He
wrong.
Said The Plane.
Which is, that's wrong. Just not the title.
Did you know? Apparently, they tried to make the title The Plane, and Gerard Butler like shot them down.
He vetoed them.
Was like, no, it's Plane.
He like
it's
demanded
just
it.
And
it was a good thing too. I'm glad he did.
So yeah, we don't know the Oscar nominations as of right this second, but this right here is where we're going to splice it in. So here's our thoughts on the Oscar nominations, which I don't know. I don't know what the big something out of left field is going to nominate for Best Picture. I'm gonna throw it down and say I think it's going to be RRR, but it could also be All Quiet on the Western Front. They're saying it's going to be something. It might be multiple foreign language movies. Which is weird because RRR also is not India's pick. That's a very controversial thing, by the way. It's not India's pick for
crazy move.
International, not foreign language. No, international picture. That's what they call it now, right?
Yes.
I think the Golden Globes is the one that calls it non-English.
Yeah, they changed it around like when Parasite came out. Anyway, curious what the big nominations are, what the snubs are. Here we go. We're talking about it.
All right. Oscar nominations. We said we're doing this. Interesting nominations, to say the least. First one being, they definitely read the Best Actor nominations off out of order, and it seemed like Brendan Fraser wasn't nominated for about 3 seconds. It was very odd.
Did they even notice that?
It was the only one they did that for. I think it was so weird. They went Austin Butler, then they went Colin Farrell, and I went. What the fuck? And then they said Brendan Fraser, and then Paul Mescal, and then Bill Nye. It was very odd. It was the only one they really did that for.
That's
Allison Williams.
That's alphabetical. Yeah. Also, Allison Williams was struggling with those names.
She missed. I think they went out of order on one of them because they just kind of stared at each other. And I thought they were about to do a
production design. Barry Keoghan, or she was just struggling with that. And even like Martin McDonagh, she was like, she said something weird. I don't know what she said, but it wasn't his name.
It was, imagine being in that crowd, like they're just like laughing at those jokes, like at the people laughing at those jokes they were making.
They laughed at the dicks thing, the short animated short, which is funny.
That was funny.
The what was it, like My Story of Dicks, whatever that animated one is.
Yeah.
Respect to that.
Oh, my God. So let's look at the big nominations, and we'll just make comments on them, and then maybe early pick. I'm looking off our friend Walt Hickey, who's got a great award website, awards.substack. Always very good in terms of front runners and nominees and who he thinks he's going to win. Best Actress, Kate Blanchett, Tar, Michelle Yeoh, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Ana de Armas, Blonde, Michelle Williams, The Fablemans. And then in what is can only be described as one of the strangest Oscar campaigns of all times, Andrea Riseborough for Toot Leslie. Which was a big
great
social
actress.
Media. Yeah, it was a big social media one. Push. She picked up a kind of surprising nomination, but there was hype that she would get nominated. In terms of people potentially left off of that award, Best Actress, some of the other people that were in contention, Danielle Deadwyler-Till, Viola Davis, The Woman King, which got zero nominations.
I think they didn't even get any like the production or technical stuff. Damn.
Yeah, but Cate Blanchett, the very clear front runner for that.
Yeah.
Would be pretty shocking if she didn't win. Michelle Yeoh might, because it is worth noting, Everything Everywhere All at Once probably had the strongest morning alongside All Quiet on the Western Front.
I think it's going to be Michelle Yeoh. I think this is the campaign for Everything Everywhere All at Once has picked up a lot more steam than I thought it would have.
Thank God.
I thought it had died down. I thought it came out too early. I thought it was the prototypical came out too soon, lost
Blanchett
steam.
Blanchett won Critics. She won Globes. Globes not typically a barometer indicator, yeah. But we'll see. It's still very early. It's very hard to tell. But Blanchett would be the front. But yeah, Everything Everywhere All at Once had the very good morning. Actor, Austin Butler, Elvis, Brendan Fraser, The Whale, Bill Nye, Living, Colin Farrell, The Banshees of Inisherin, and Paul Mescal, After Sun, which was not a crazy surprise. He was on the list. Odd that that movie didn't get any love other than just Best Actor. After Sun, I think, is very worthy of a Best Picture nomination.
The Paul Mescal stan Twitter has been going absolutely ballistic, which is kind of fun.
I thought it should have been a Best Director nom too. I just watched it, but that was like directorial wise, that was some really cool stuff.
Yeah, your boy Baz not getting a nom, even though his movie got Best Picture nom, is kind of crazy.
What?
Your boy Baz not getting a Best Director nom despite his picture getting BP is kind of crazy, is it not?
Dude, they gave that movie a cinematography nom though.
That's
they did.
Yeah,
So Best Actor, the only one that you could really consider maybe being a snubby, Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise lost a lot of steam as of late. Oh, but you want to talk about fucking falling off the face of the earth with Hugh Jackman in The Sun. That movie ended up being so bad. That was a front runner for a while in that category. Tom Cruise not getting one's a bummer. I mean, I get it. I think all five of these probably better performances, but Cruise for a long time seemed like one of the top three locks to get a nom. It's a bummer he didn't.
That wasn't like a challenging role or anything, that were even like a particularly impressive like sort of character performance or anything like that. I don't think that should have been nominated. Like, no, you were saying, like all the other ones.
No, I could for months. I mean, it was one of the five. So it was kind of like,
yeah.
I think if like you're a fan of the movie, which I mean, it got a Best Picture nom. It was kind of like that would have been a nice little extra push for it. But this will be between Butler and Brendan Fraser, potentially Colin Farrell. But it seems like I gotta be honest. If Austin Butler doesn't win this, I'll be shocked.
I hope he doesn't.
This is going to be one of the strongest Oscar campaigns of all time.
One of those. It's literally like on paper. It's just exactly what the Academy likes. Yeah, I mean it is like
it's Bohemian Rhapsody 2.0.
They love.
I actually think probably more than Blanchett. I think you're going to see the betting odds on this one, which I'm not referring to any specific odds or anything. Sometimes they're available on the Barstool Sportsbook. Sometimes they're not, depending on where you live. Won't discuss that until we see anything official. But there's a betting odds on Austin Butler. I think these are just going to get larger and larger and larger as the weeks go on.
What else could it possibly win, Elvis? It's not going to win Best Picture. Like, what else was it nominated for that it could even come close? Definitely not winning cinematography.
It's all I know is, look, you're not going to see it mainstream because that's not where it goes. But like, it is this by all accounts is about to get one of the most intense Oscar pushes that you could ever possibly imagine. But Butler, see, I mean, I want Brendan Fraser to win. I think we all do, but I don't know. I think Butler takes this.
Dude, Elvis got an editing nom too. I didn't even notice that.
Oh yeah, there's your Bohemian Rhapsody. This is Bohemian Rhapsody all over again, except albeit admittedly better performances across the board.
Yeah, I was going to say this is a better movie.
Except for Tom Hanks. Yeah, fuck, well, I don't know. Maybe it is more even than I think it is. It's more of an even spell than maybe. Yeah, damn. I don't know.
This is better. This is at least Elvis tried to do something.
But like, the first act of Elvis is a war crime. Like at least like Bohemian Rhapsody was consistently mid. Like the first 45 minutes of Bohemian Rhapsody is legitimately unwatchable, or of Elvis is legitimately unwatchable.
Supporting actress, Angela Bassett seems like the front runner. Which would be obviously a monumental win for Marvel Studios, if she wins for Black Panther Wakanda Forever. This is kind of always where things break weird. One of the supporting sometimes can have a big upset. Again, this is where Everything Everywhere All at Once got two nominations. So could maybe steal something there, but it does seem like Bassett is the front runner by all accounts. And the five that were expected to be nominated did get nominated here.
She was good, but front runner in this category
shouldn't logically speaking shouldn't be.
I mean, no, I think she's the best.
None of this is opinion based. It's all what it is. Yeah. Like, she is the front runner. Yeah.
I'm just reacting. I'm just giving my thoughts, baby.
Yeah.
I got the Oscar fever.
I don't mind her being the front runner. I thought she was fucking incredible.
I think Stephanie Sue was like, when you just think about it from like a perspective of like, she had to do two performances in the movie where she had to do relatable teenager and then also like multiverse time queen at the same time and did both amazing. That's more impressive to me than like more of a, like, albeit like very emotional, but more of a one dimensional performance. So I think that was more impressive to me.
Yeah. If I had my pick, I'd go Hong Chao. I still think Hong Chao, that was one of the
crushed
best.
It.
I think Brendan Fraser was amazing, but I still think Hong Chao is the best performance in that movie.
Also, why, like, Jamie Curtis has like won some of these, I think, across like the nomination she's gotten in the other shows, but like, why is she up here for this? Like, she was very funny, Jamie Lee Curtis, but like, was she the best supporting actress? Like, no, like, she was just very funny part of the movie. I don't know.
So I think the meal upset, you'd probably see it from Everything Every Wall Want, either Stephanie Hsu or Jamie Lee Curtis. I think based on what we've seen so far, Kerry Condon, Hong Chao probably won't win. But Bassett, Kerry Condon crushed her. Supporting actor, this was this one had two surprises. Kiwi Kwan is probably like the lock right now. There's always one stone cold lock for an acting category. It seems to be him for Everything Every Wall Wants. Barry Keoghan, Brendan Gleeson, Benjamin Sheeran got two nominations. But the surprise is Brian Tyree Henry for Causeway.
Yeah.
And then Judd Hirsch for Fablemans.
He came in for 5 minutes, delivered the best 5 minutes of acting in that entire movie, and then dipped. I respect the hell out of it. But like,
maybe the best five minutes of acting of the year, but granted, it was just 5 minutes, the thing. Like, it really was. Like,
dude, what was it? And people complained. Do you remember they bitched about Mahershala Ali and like him getting supporting actor nom? And he was in that movie for like a half an hour. Like, they're like, oh, it's too short, not enough time. And like, fucking Judd Hirsch is in this for legitimately 5 minutes.
The most recent, like the shortest one in the last probably 20 years, is probably Max von Sydow, but there's a nomination. Yeah. But Eddie Redmayne was up there, maybe, though that wasn't as serious, The Good Nurse. The one that was, I guess, a surprise would be Judd Hirsch leaps over Paul Dano from The Fablemans.
That did surprise me.
He was better than Paul Dano in The Fablemans, for whatever that's worth.
That was probably the big surprise.
I liked seeing our good boy, Barry Keoghan.
Keoghan.
Also, we technically kicked off the Kiwi Kwan Oscar campaign.
We absolutely did.
So when he wins, I hope he thanks us.
That is true.
We're the first people on the list.
Best director had one big surprise. I don't know if it was a big surprise. It had four locks. The locks Daniels. For nomination were the Daniels, which they did say both their names. I feel like.
I think they had to. I think that's like their artist name is Daniels. It's like, I feel like you had to go more technical.
I wonder what they prefer. Because when I type it out and like I'm giving credit in these like tweets and posts on Instagram and stuff, like I don't know whether to type their names out or.
I think I assume they prefer the Daniels. That's like their.
Yes, it.
Their thing.
I mean, that'd be like, I don't know. That seems like.
Like they wouldn't say like the Coen brothers, you know what I mean? Like if they were nominating one of their movies, they would say like Joel and Ethan Coen.
Yeah, but Daniels is
that'd be like calling
Lady Gaga by her real name.
But it's like you refer to like the Coen brothers. Like you don't be like, did you watch that Joel and Ethan Coen movie? And like, no, you say the Coen brothers movie. You know, it's like it's essentially a moniker for them too. And like Daniels is just their last names. Both of them is last and first names, whatever the fuck it is. But like, that's just their thing. I don't know. I think you got to go technical. You can't use their moniker there.
Both their first name. Like Daniel Scheichert and Daniel Kwan.
Yeah, first names.
They got nominated. Tough to say what the real frontrunner is right now. I assume it's going to be Spielberg just based on merit and based on default. But he did win the Globe. Critics' Choice was Daniels, though, which holds more weight. This is by awards.substack.com. Critics' Choice does hold more weight than the Globes. And again, we're still very, very early in the award season. Martin McDonagh for Banshees of Inisherin, Todd Field for Tar. And then the fifth one was up in the air, and it was going through Ruben Östlund for Triangle of Sadness, which is a pretty big surprise.
It seems like they really like that movie. based on it got a quite a few more noms than I thought it would.
James Cameron. No Jim Cameron, though he routinely says he doesn't care about director. He's a picture guy, cares about best picture. And I'm not even making that. He's legitimately said that multiple times. Edward Berger for All Quiet on the Western Front. Kind of surprising because All Quiet got a ton of noms and it didn't get best director. In terms of female directing, Sarah Polley was the only real female that was going to maybe be in the running for Women Talking. Baz did not get it for Elvis, obviously. And then the only other one that might have happened would have been S.S. Rajamouli for RRR, which RRR basically got completely shut out of everything.
Snubbed.
Ruben Oslin did leap up. He was kind of the long shot that got the nomination. And then Best Picture.
You guys are Elvis snubs, by the way. Would you have picked RRR over Elvis if you could go and change it right now?
For a picture?
For Best Picture.
What was the question?
If you could take out Elvis from Best Picture's contention and put in RRR, would you?
Yeah, but that wouldn't be the first one I go to, though.
It might be mine.
Women Talking, I'd probably take out. I just don't love All Quiet.
Yeah, I would take out Women Talking.
I just don't.
I would take it out of my life if I could. Not even just the Oscars. Just remove it from everyday experience.
I don't want to say what I would take out.
People wanted us to review All Quiet for so long. All Quiet just didn't. Like, it's good. It's a good movie. All Quiet in the Western's a good movie, but it just did not resonate with me.
How you feel about All Quiet is how I feel about Tar. Like, sure, good movie.
I'm not even a Tar person either.
No, Tar's
very good. Good movie.
I'm on Jeff's page with both of these.
Yeah.
It's not like a movie I watched and I was like, this should be nominated at the end of the year. Yeah, that's the type of experience I felt with both those movies.
Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fablemans, The Banshees of Inisherin, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Elvis, Avatar The Way of Water, Women Talking, All Quiet on the Western Front, and then the surprise was Triangle of Sadness. The last three were going to be kind of the what could get in. The Whale did not get nominated, though that seemed recent, like that was going to happen. Babylon was maybe going to be kind of one of those, oh God, it got nominated. I thought, and it seemed like most people thought, and I don't think either deserved it, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, or Glass Onion were going to get nominated for Best Picture. That seemed like the pun that was kind of being predicted the last couple of days by everybody, that one of those was going to get in. It seemed like a rather big mainstream year, like blockbuster year. Neither did get nominated. RRR was, I thought it was going to be a wild card pick, get thrown in there. It not getting India's nod for their nomination for International Picture definitely hurt it. So none of those get in. Triangle of Sadness, a surprise that leaps into the 10. Women Talking did seem like it was going to get nominated kind of in the last couple of days. And then All Quiet did end up getting the International Picture nomination that leaps over to Best Picture. Everything Everywhere All at Once is definitely the in the lead right now, though it's a three-horse race. And there's really no clear front runner. Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fablemans, and Banshees of Inisherin. I don't think anything else is going to come close to touching it. Though, we will see as the weeks move on. Right now, Everything Everywhere All at Once has probably an edge due to Critics' Choice Award. But we haven't seen Producers Guild, Directors Guild, SAG. We haven't seen all the indicators for what could win. But it picked up 11 nominations. It's had a big campaign. It's lasted this long, almost an entire year. So I think Everything Everywhere All at Once is what you consider to be the odds-on favorite right now. I know you said it, Gooch, to me in this morning, but Fablemans has definitely lost steam.
Mm.
It feels like the Academy has not responded the way that you would think to this movie. Like, it's they don't love it, is what I'm saying. Like, or else it would be, you'd see more acting noms, you'd see more like just in the other spots, but you really don't.
It's like the Paul Pierce retirement tour. Like when they're like, they don't love you like that, man. They don't love you like you think they love you. Poor movie, poor Spielberg.
I really think there's an outside shot on John Williams, I think. For score.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because I thought Babylon would be a lock, but it's pretty obvious the Academy does not like Babylon at all.
There wasn't like a standout like performance or rather composer either. Like there's not one where I was like, oh, that's obviously the best score of the year or anything like that.
Exactly. It's his what? This is his final work with Spielberg. It's not his. Is it his final work?
He said overall? Something like he would do another Star Wars. I think someone said that recently.
He keeps walking it back. Yeah. Animated feature. Guillermo del Toro's Pokemon. Guillermo del Toro's
Pokemon. I would watch the shit out of that. I would watch Dude, that. In
that
an
would be
instant.
So good. Yeah,
that would rock. Oh my god.
Dude, you do like kaijus?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Great, by the way, the animated feature was great. They go, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio. Everyone's like, yeah, Marcel the Shell with shoes on. Yeah, which I hope that wins, by the way. Though, yeah. Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio is very good. Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. If that wins, I'd be happy too. Yeah, then they go, The Sea Beast. Everyone's like,
hey. the Netflix movie, Carl Urban, yeah.
Turning Red, yeah. So that those are the nominations there. Right. Screenplay, original, Banshees, everything. Fableman's Tar, Triangle of Sadness, adapted screenplay, All Quiet on the Western Front, Glass Onion, Living, Top Gun Maverick, and Women Talking. For those wondering, if you are wondering, sequels end up being nominated for adapted. That's why Top Gun Maverick. If you're looking furiously for the source material for Top Gun Maverick, it's not adapted off anything. It's sequels are, which is kind of crazy, two sequels nominated. I feel like you just don't see it these days anymore. They're adapted because they are sequels. Best original original song. This is going to be interesting because lately they've been trying to not do every song performance. If Not Too doesn't get a performance at the Oscars, people are going to raise hell.
Performance and win.
It should win too, yes.
An absolute win.
Any song that, again, I always will favor a song that is in the movie, that is a integral part of the movie.
Yes.
And Not Too is probably, it is the most popular scene from the movie.
Yeah.
Applause for Tell Like a Woman.
It's like that versus like the Lady Gaga song that plays at the end of Top Gun Maverick. That like everyone's leaving the theater too. Like that's not part of the movie.
I agree. That should not count. It shouldn't. I don't think you should be allowed to do that.
Yeah, it's like when you're leaving the movie, that doesn't count at all to me. Like Jesus,
that's just a big studio. It's just a big studio paying for an artist to come in and write a song.
Except they can
just
say they did it. Yeah.
Hold My Hand, Top Gun Maverick, Lady Gaga, Lift Me Up, Rihanna, Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Not Too for RRR, and then This Is a Life for Everything Ever All at Once. Cinematography, All Quiet, Empire Light, Roger Deakins, Tar, and then Elvis and Bardo, False Chronicle of a Handful of Truths.
That has a good shot. I mean, that looked good. I hated that movie, but
good-looking movie. And Yuri Tuno knows how to make a movie look good. No one can deny that, I think.
Leading nominations, Everything Ever All Once got 11 nominations.
Beast Mode.
Make sure to make a graphic for that. That's the move there. Mm. All Quiet, Banshees 9, Elvis 8, Fableman 7, Tar and Top Gun Maverick 6, Wakanda Forever 5, Avatar 4. Now we're getting to technical stuff. Those are the nominations. Hosted by Jimmy Kimmel on March 12th. Selection Sunday. Watch your bracket get established and then tune into the Oscars. What was the leading last year? Power of the Dog, 12 nominations.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What did that actually win? I don't remember.
What
did Power of the Dog actually win among all those nominations?
She won Best Director.
Yeah, Jane Campion. But like what... Like Cody Smith didn't win, Bunny the Cumberbatch didn't win anything. Like, right? Am I going crazy on that? I don't know. Not that I don't. I only remember Jane Campion. Really, it's kind of a boring Oscars.
Where does it? What's the most? What's the list of most nominations? It's 14: Titanic, La La Land, and All About Eve. So 11.
I'm glad they got Jimmy Kimmel in there. Because, after a few years ago with Kevin Hart, you know, all that controversial stuff from his past came up. It's glad they went with someone with a clean slate. Nothing like, controversial in his past.
I mean, it's so unoriginal. And I just like, if he makes a fucking Trump joke, I'm going to just fuck.
Oh, speaking of, Troy Bolins just sent me, like, literally just came in. His reaction to the Oscars is the very first thing he just texted.
Maybe people are afraid to say this, but After Sun wasn't very good. It wasn't bad, but it also wasn't good. Paul Mescal was fine, but overall, it was a very boring movie that almost tries to hard. And I don't know. I don't know what to say. It just wasn't very good. And I've seen so many better films.
That's Joe Ballin's take on the Oscars.
This is what happens when you're two years out of the league. Your takes start to get dull.
Dude, him not liking fucking Last of Us. Just he's lost his fastball from being offline.
You've heard it here first. Troy Bolins says Amsterdam should have been nominated for Best Picture.
God.
He's playing in the Korean baseball league now.
Yeah.
He's washed up.
Literally, yeah. He just put up like 50-40 in the fucking CBL.
So Gold Derby is a website where you can kind of see where all the experts have things slated and what they think is going to win. I always love looking the day of the nominations, who like stopped updating their predictions. Mm. Let's see. Here are movies that were still on people's ballot for Best Picture. Let me read them off real quick. Emily the Criminal, good movie. Not sure it really had a chance.
Yeah.
Amsterdam. My Policeman.
Boo.
The Pale Blue Eye. Bardo. The Good Nurse. Yeah, there's a couple of them. But yeah. Also, Decision to Leave not getting just anything.
That's crazy.
Wait, it didn't get an international? Wait, what were the international noms?
It was like some Belgian movie.
There, I got it.
Fucking
All Quiet on the Western Front, Argentina, 1985. Mm-hmm. Close. That's the Belgian movie. EO, which was the A24 Neon release, I think. Mm-hmm. One of the two. And then The Quiet Girl, which actually I don't know what that. What is The Quiet Girl?
It sounds
Decision to Leave is probably for me, if I would say A Quiet Girl's Irish, very good movie.
Put The Quiet Girl up against Women Talking, see who breaks first.
After every single, they would like announce a nom, and then people would like go like, ooh.
Yeah.
Dude, we gotta edit it so it's like they announce like Women or The Quiet Girl, and everybody goes woo, and then they go Women Talking, and then I just splice it boo.
Yeah. Oh, please do that. That'd be really funny.
Argentina 1985 is one of my ten favorite movies of the year. Very good movie. I mean, I think All Quiet's going to win. I don't think it's the best of that group. Yeah, Decision to Leave being snubbed out of Best International, that's a massive disappointment. EO is pretty solid. Quiet Girl, really good.
RR, man, should have been nominated. India, you fucked up.
I'd be happy with All Quiet winning. I can't believe Decision to Leave didn't get nominated. Holy shit. Yeah,
crazy.
Yeah.
Or Broker, or like anything from the East. Yeah. Wow. I wouldn't be bad if All Quiet wins.
Yeah, I mean, All Quiet's good. It just wasn't. I don't know. I'm not championing it as much as others. I guess. I guess that's what it boils down to.
It is one of the best Netflix movies ever, without a doubt. I don't know if it's deserved the hype it's gotten. It's part of that is just like my stupid broken brain having reverence for like three books, and when they got turned into movies and weren't as good, it made me mad because I'm a fucking nerd. But man, is that book so fucking good? And is this movie just like very much above average? And that's bad.
Is that why? Are you mad about the lack of noms for Where the Crawdads Sing?
Yeah, dude, I couldn't believe it. My mom's book club going brazy right now.
There are actually some girls in the office. They were watching the noms right behind me, and they were like, "I can't believe Taylor Swift didn't get nominated." And I was like, "For what?" They're like, "Her song in Where the Crawdads Sing."
Obviously, yeah. Shout out to Lizzie Jones. She's gonna get one day. She's gonna get hers.
I'm trying to think what else. The movie that India did nominate, by the way, Last Film Show, was very good, but it wasn't as good as RR.
Did that movie have a guy fucking suplexing a jaguar? Don't think so.
So and that's, using the jaguar as a weapon.
Yes, dude. Come on.
That's it.
Shit, what a good movie.
Oscars on March 12th.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. All right, back to the regular podcast.
All right, now we know.
Wow. Wow, I can't believe he got snubbed.
Great. It's insane.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Oscars. You know what didn't get a recommendation? No Babylon from Adam Aaron. He had no recommendation for Babylon.
That's a good point.
That's I think the nail in the coffin for that movie is that you couldn't get the AMC guy to recommend your $80 million movie in his theaters. That's bad.
Yeah.
Dude, that movie lost so... I can't believe how much money that movie lost.
it's incredible.
Speaking of movies that are going to lose a lot of money, new trailer for Dungeon & Dragon, Honor Among Thieves. Longest title. What a ridiculous title.
Why? Why is there a subtitle for the first one? Just call it Dungeons & Dragons, right?
They probably are like, we don't want them to think we're just complete fucking nerds, so let's like give this cool like anti-hero subtitle.
Yeah. That dude, I said that from that first commercial or first trailer when you guys were like, it looks kind of fun. Like, no, that movie's going to be dog shit. That thing's going to lose so much money and be bad. That shit's going to be so bad.
It's going to lose so much money.
I bet you see it.
I bet you see it and you don't tell us that you regretted going to see it. I know it's a low bar. That's a low bar.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good floor to put on this movie. I don't think it's a movie where I'm going to watch it and I'm going to say like this is bottom whatever 10, 50 of the year, but it's going to be one where I'm going to be like, this is a waste of time and culturally insignificant to everyone's experience.
But now that I'm saying it, it's like now it's probably just going to be such complete ass.
Chris Pine's got to go back. Like franchises, I think he's moved on from them. I think he needs to go and make like more Hell or High Water type deals and stuff like that. Even what was that one he did last year with Ben Foster, The Contractor or something like that, or Contractors, I forget what it was called. Not great, but like it was okay. Do stuff like that. Or Jack Ryan, Shadow Recruit, another Kenneth Branagh banger.
Oh yeah. another Horrible Bosses. He was funny in the second one.
Yeah, he was. People forget. I think that movie gets overlooked because of Kevin Spacey, but like both of those movies were very funny. Like very good comedies.
Chris Pine, very funny in the second one too.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of which, do you see, was it Torino, the football, the Italian soccer team, had like welcomed Kevin Spacey as like a featured guest for a game? And they promptly lost like 2-0, I think. You know, they put up all these pictures. They're like grazie mille, Kevin Spacey, and like shaking hands with their club president and like holding up a Torino jersey with Spacey on the back. It was so funny. Unbelievable.
I heard they're having Roman Polanski at the next game.
Yeah, I mean, they would. The French love him. I could see him being a PSG super fan.
Last week we had a couple of trailers. We'll talk about the Netflix. You guys talked about it in the last episode, but we'll do a quick run through the Netflix stuff as well again. But Scream had a trailer, Scream 6, which is set in New York. Looks kind of cool. Kind of cool. It's like it's in a different space. Also, pretty obvious. This may be a spoiler. Pretty obvious that Matthew Lillard's the villain, right? Like he's
feels
back,
like it, no.
Right?
You no, think really. So?
Watch any breakdown. Watch, like, focus. Like, they go into a lair, like a shrine of all the past Ghostface, and they have all these things that there's just no way anyone would, like, his robe, the TV. Again, I'm not even saying that that's, like, new. Like, any breakdown of the trailer is saying it's, like, it makes sense that his fate is not decided in these movies. And I just rewatched the first one recently. I think it's because you did. Gooch, you rewatched Scream, right?
Yeah,
Gooch
I did a big Scream, guys.
Big Scream. Yeah, I was like, fuck it, I'm going to watch Scream too. So I rewatched Scream, and I was like, oh, I forgot this is coming out. It kind of makes sense that he'd be back as a villain.
Weren't there rumors about that with the last one too?
Yeah, I don't know what the deal was with that, but I think he said he's not in this one, but why would he say he is if he is the villain?
No way home principle. Just deny.
Cool,
you guys think on... Do you think Nev Campbell's for sure out? Like for sure,
for
sure.
I think for this one, yes. But I bet they find a way to bring her back when they make another one.
What was the deal? Like they offered her no money, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
She was pissed at the offer and then you walked. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's like one of those things where like when you're playing Madden franchise and you want to re-sign a player and it's like you offer lowball him so much, they're just like, yeah, I'm not interested in playing with this team anymore. You can't do that.
you gotta do a medium offer. And you're like, damn it, I have autosave on too. Now I definitely can't sign him.
Exactly.
It looked cool though. I like the open, like I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I'm insanely over the top amped for Scream, though the last one was enjoyable. But like, I kind of the New York concept is very intriguing. Like it's nice to take it out, like outside of just the suburbs.
I think it's necessary too. I mean, getting a little bit of Jason Takes Manhattan vibes, but we can ignore that. My only observation, I know she was in the last one. I got ripped on Twitter for this. Dude, Jenna Ortega is in fucking everything, dude. She's in everything right now. But in the next 5 years, every movie is going to have her, Anya Taylor-Joy, or Timothy Chalamet, and Tom
Holland. She's the it girl, man. It's got to happen. There's a cycle that every one of these people goes through, especially when they're popular through like a streaming service like she is with Wednesday.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm not complaining. It was just, so, I mean, we'll say I enjoyed the last one for what it was. I liked Mikey Madison the last one. It's too bad she's not coming back.
Remember when they had Millie Bobby Brown and Godzilla just for like five lines worth of dialogue and like zero, like that? What a waste of a casting that was.
She's with the podcaster.
Yeah, she's with what was it? Brian Tyree Henry was the podcaster, I think.
Yeah, so stupid.
Charles Dance was like an eco terrorist that plot never gets resolved. Like, what a fucking dumb movie.
You know what I noticed too in this trailer? They gave Jenna Ortega a haircut to make her look like Sidney Prescott. Like they,
yeah, I saw your tweet about
they
that.
Were
yeah.
they were doing everything they could to make her look like her.
Yeah,
it's good which marketing. Kind of strange.
It's bizarre. I hope they. She wasn't even the main character in the last one.
No, but I hope she does become the main character because her sister, Melissa Barea, no offense to her, was fucking awful in the last one. Like she just
that's
can't
pretty offensive. It. I'll be honest. It's a tough way to lead off with no offense and then yeah, say, I mean, what a like, brutal I'm sorry. Job.
She was fucking was very abysmal. Offensive. She was what? Bad.
No offense intended. You fucking suck.
Dude. I thought she was really bad.
Huh.
I also am like, on the, she's on the sus list, to borrow from our good friend Clem and Robbie. I think she could be the killer. Remember, she was dealing with the stuff with her dad, the last one. Like, her dad was haunting her, Billy Loomis. Like,
you remember this movie a lot more than I think we do, to be honest.
You don't remember Jack Quaid?
You don't remember these little minutia details of the last Scream movie? No, not really. I'll be honest, when kind of one year out the other.
Dude, I'm a Scream head. I'm a Stab. What do they call the fans in the movie? Stab? The fans of Stab?
Stab yeah. fans?
The Stabbies.
Yeah.
I'm a Stabby. Hey, I'm stabbing here. Hey.
Netflix.
We get a slice of pizza.
Netflix 2023 trailer came out, which always just reinforces that the good movies are in theaters. Though some of these could be good, but I watch and that was my initial thought. I'm like, wow, these all look insanely mediocre for the most part. And the good shit is definitely still in theaters, but I'll read off some of them.
They're fake. They're like the Cartman Osimo bot movies, basically.
Right. Like this one, Your Place or Mine with Reese Witherspoon and Ashton Kutcher, rom-com.
Could be good. Could be good.
Out. Out.
I don't know.
Out.
That comes out February 10th. February 24th, Luther, The Fallen Son.
In. Was very Luther. In.
Yeah, me too. I am in on that one.
Good show.
Murder Mystery 2 with Jennifer Aniston and Adam Sandler.
The first one was a pleasant surprise. People forget.
Stop. It wasn't complete dog shit. Like, it was like kind of... that's what a Netflix movie should be, by the way. Mm-hmm. That really is what it should be. It shouldn't be Six Underground. Like, Murder Mystery is the perfect Netflix movie.
It should be the wrong Missy.
Yeah. No. It should be like a max budget of like $50 million for any given Netflix movie.
Cannot what does she call herself? What does she call herself when she puts her hair over her face? Star? What is it?
She has like a weird alter ego.
Oh, that movie is so bad, dude.
That was offensively bad.
It's bad, but Lauren Lapkus is so committed that entire movie. We should give that shit a rewatch.
Yeah, she's I want to give
her a little credit. That can't be an easy thing to do for an entire movie. Just be an absolute nuisance.
So annoying.
But it is.
Just show up on set and just be the worst fucking person in the world.
It's so annoying.
In the reintroduction to her character, she sexually assaults our protagonist. You remember that when she wakes up, she's giving David Spade a handy on the plane while he's sleeping. It's the most disturbing shit.
He is such an unredeeming scumbag in that movie too. Like, he really is. Like, he's a huge piece of shit.
He's a piece of shit, and yet you somehow feel sorry for him because he's dealing with an absolute monster of a person.
Dude, what would you think the Rotten Tomatoes score of Wrong Missy is? It may surprise
you. Fan or critics?
It's not as bad as you think. Did you ever watch the Red Letter Media review where they were reading off positive reviews?
They read off their review from Trill Ballins. It was like a Trill. Yeah.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Dude, it's got 32. Ugh. That's disgusting. That's deplorable behavior from Rotten Tomato critics.
I think it's just
that submit there.
That dropped right in the heart of COVID. I think people were like, I'll watch something.
It's the alter ego, by the way. It was named Hellstar.
Hellstar. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
hell, and she goes, hell star.
Oh, that bathtub scene is one of the worst scenes in any movie in the last 50 years.
One of the first reviews I saw was from Fanside, and they're like, it's a real playground for Lauren Lupkus. Like, no. Like, yeah, a real sandbox performance from Lauren Lupkus in that. You shitting me?
I love that we remember it, though. We remember all these scenes.
Yeah, but see, that's what I she love this type of movie.
She was the girl on the playground eating her boogers.
Yeah. She was, like, taking a shit in the sandbox and burying it like a cat. She, but, like, movies like this I like more than Man Called Otto or whatever, where it just you forget it forever. That's it never true. Actually existed.
I agree with that.
When they're so bad that you remember them, there is something redeemable about that. There is nothing redeemable about Man Named Otto.
I don't know if this is real, by the way, but somebody on our Discord noted that there's an advertisement going around for A Man Called Otto, and they're saying, like, they're using, like, FOMO, Fear Missing Otto.
Yeah, Fear Missing Otto.
Oh, no.
That rocks, though. I
kind of love that, though. That's so how do you do, fellow kids. That's unbelievable. Fuck. Extraction 2, June 16th. I think I was excited for that.
I think that's the perfect Netflix movie. I think Extraction is like the gold standard for Netflix. Like, you can't do better.
Yeah.
Because that's it's the action and like intensity that they want from, again, I'm going to use Six Underground. Or what was the Mountains one with Ben Affleck? The
fucking Frontier.
Triple Frontier.
But like,
oh, boring.
None of those do anything unique and different. And Extraction 2, my Extraction was really good, but like, Extraction's not, it's not Mission Impossible, right? Like, it's not going to be John Wick, but like, it's different, it looks cool, it's unique, and it's just a good fucking time. Like, that should be what they do. Not these, like, cookie cutter, like Six Underground, we're trying to start a series. Like, that should not be what it is. Because now, Roger, I got a series that's like, different.
Yeah, and those ones too. I think the issue with those is they try to be so funny too. They're like trying to weird this weird action comedy blend. Like Extraction was just, hey, we're just going to show you 6'4" Chris Hemsworth beating the shit out of people in really cool action set pieces and like car crashes, gunfights, all of that. That's it. That's all you're getting. And I love that. I fucking love that movie, man. That was a good ass movie. I'm going to rewatch that later this week.
They cloned Tyrone with John Boyega, Jamie Foxx, and Tiana. I thought this came out like 5 months ago. I thought I've seen this movie.
It's
I haven't.
Been delayed a lot.
That's my biggest concern. I think everything about this movie looks cool, except for the fact that they've delayed it like 4 times. Yeah. Which
I
is
like that
never...
it got delayed in the summer, though. It didn't get delayed to like next week. So maybe that's...
Want to know what has me sold on that, by the way? The fact that Ray Charles, goddamn. Jamie Foxx's name in that. His name in the movie is Slick Charles. And that has me instantly sold on that movie. That his name is Slick Charles.
Ken Jack blew up the group chat when he saw this one. Gal Gadot stars in Heart of Stone coming out August 11th.
Wait, no, read this. Did you read the synopsis of it? Why it's called Heart of Stone? Your character's name is Special Agent Rachel Stone. I'm not shitting you. Like, it's just so fucking dumb. It looks like awful. Ugh. Enough of Gal Gadot.
Also,
Rachel Stone.
I'm reading this off Esquire, by the way, because they listed just like 15 of them. I didn't want to read all of them. And the disrespect, they called him Jamie Dorman.
Oh, man, that's a good insult, though. That's a great insult.
Damn.
Barb and Star.
Pain Hustlers, based off of a book.
Yeah, that one
based off
interesting.
A book. Emily Blunt.
Who's directing that again? October. It's a big director.
Is that SML? Is that the SML one?
No.
Pain Hustlers is directed by...
It's David Yates,
David Yates.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that could be interested. Good or bad.
Finally,
I'm sure it'll be sepia-toned.
Yeah, finally detached himself from the wizarding world. The next one is the big one, at least
big Percocet
movie. Film... Film Buffs, The Killer from David Fincher with Michael Fassbender, Tilda Swinton.
Did they produce this or are they distributing it?
Who?
Netflix.
Like, did they actually produce this movie?
They did like a multi-movie deal.
I don't know if this is one of those.
They did like a multi-year deal with Fincher, no?
Yeah.
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 No, they're not a producer.
They're just distributing,
which is good because you can tell the sheen of Netflix on
exactly.
a Netflix.
That's
movie.
Why I was wondering because you can like look at it and be like, yeah, I don't think Netflix produced this.
Yeah, there's some guy with like a gun and a filter like sitting on every Netflix movie.
This is big for Fassbender, by the way.
I was about to say Fassbender needs this, man.
Great actor, he's god awful agent.
Yeah. First movie since
I want him to be casted as Mr. Freeze so bad. I think he'd be perfect.
Yeah.
Like he's
first movie since Mank. But also this is really his first movie since Gone Girl. That's like his thing. Because remember, he picked this up from his father's script. And I mean it was his thing, don't get me wrong, but like I was talking to one of our coworkers, Kirk Minahan, about this a while ago. We were like, this feels like his first really since Gone Girl. Because it just feels like the first real like Fincher. And Mank was fine. Mank was very Finchery, but it wasn't like the Fincher that I love and obsessed with.
It was not one of his top tier films.
No.
What I said on the long take on Friday, I was like, you can just bet on Fincher. Like even his if you want to say Mank is his bad movie, like that's still an Academy Award nominee. I hope they do a theater release for that, like they did with Knives Out. Like, give it a week.
Yeah.
Give it a couple weeks. That's something that deserves to be seen in the theater.
Yeah, right now it doesn't say if it is or not. We'll see. That is something I want to see in theaters. Leo, it's an Adam Sandler animated movie where he plays a lizard.
Yeah.
Kind of like that. I mean, way to just steal Rango's whole flow, but whatever.
Literally, yeah.
Leave the World Behind with Julia Roberts. Some sort of thriller.
No.
Sure.
Which one is the S-Mail one? I'm excited for that, too.
And then Maestro with Bradley Cooper. That comes out end of the year. It's going to be a theater and then Netflix release. That's where he's been walking around looking like he's a maestro. Very funny in costume.
Oh, yeah. He's been filming that in New York. I walked by them filming that one day.
Yeah. So that's the Netflix releases. And then one more piece of news. Tron.
Yeah, that's right.
Disney gearing up for – and I was wondering why this news is starting to drop again, and I just remembered why. Because they're opening up their massive ride in Disney World very soon.
Yep.
By the way, RIP Splash Mountain. Rest in peace, bitch.
Yeah, it did. Splash Mountain officially dead today.
Mm-hmm.
Also, that's like the most – I saw the most fucking Disney adults thing of all time, which, I mean, I say this. I'm going to Disneyland in like 2 weeks, but before the Super Bowl week. But there's a video of people fighting to be the last person in line, to be the last person to ride Splash Mountain. It's the most just like fucked up theme park person thing I've ever seen. Also, they opened up they soft opened the Nintendo World, the Mario Land. The video's been out from Japan for a while. The fucking Mario Kart ride stinks. It doesn't stinks. Look great. And I remember when they first showed that, and it was like a dad and a kid on a cart, and you're like, holy fucking shit. Like, you're going to be actually – it's not that at all. Like, you're in a cart with three other people. It's such a letdown compared to what was released. And I'm like, how do you fuck that up? Like,
I think it was like safety concerns. They're like, we can't give the passengers green shells.
It's like, can I do that? Tron 3. I don't even know really how to describe this.
Jared Leto does Tron. I think that's a good description.
It's Jared Leto's Tron.
Sure.
No one knows if Garrett Hedlund or Olivia Wilde are going to be like, no one really knows anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, no one knows anything. It's just that this is happening.
I feel like they've been talking about this forever, Jared, too, right?
Yeah.
Like a year or two, maybe 2 years.
Yeah, I mean. But, like, Jared Leto does feel like he belongs in a Tron movie, but I just hate him as a lead actor.
Yeah.
Like, he's just so much better as a supporting actor.
Greatest supporting
the
character,
the fucking
dude.
Weirdo energy that he could bring to this and really make this stink would be – which I actually rewatched Tron Legacy recently, and it has its issues. There's something with Tron Legacy that's just, like, missing.
Solid, though. All things considered,
and I don't even mean that
in
the way of, like, it makes –
like, you know what I mean? Where it's like the first Tron movie, like you hear about a late Tron sequel and you're like, this is going to be dog shit. And like, it was very pleasantly surprising, I thought.
Yeah, it felt like it was so close to being incredible. Mm. And I don't even mean that as a bad thing. Like, I watched it, I'm like, yeah, I think I like this even. Like, every time I watch, I like it more. Also, the Daft Punk, the soundtrack, yeah, it sounds incredible. Yeah. That's like a big thing. And you live in that world. But like, I enjoyed it. You know, again, I always feel like it was like just really close to being great. But this, I just don't know. And if he brings that weirdo, like, too much energy,
if
just not, yeah, he will.
It's not much of an option here.
What's he gonna do to prepare for Tron? What's he gonna do? He's gonna he's gonna be screaming out racial slurs in a Discord voice chat.
He's gonna release all of his coworkers' browser histories. He's gonna do something crazy. I can't wait. Tron. just makes sense for him though.
I'm gonna see him just munching on like an NVIDIA graphics card.
I was watching what do you call it? Popstar this last week, and the scene where Connor Farrell is just like, 10 seconds is an eternity, Harry. It's a third of the way to Mars. And he's just like, remember, Connor, it's just the name of the band is 30 seconds to Mars. It's not a fact. What a fucking good movie. Holy shit.
Speaking of Jared Leto,
that was the segue.
By the way, she's in the news because I don't know if it's like a Super Bowl stunt or if it's they truly buckled to the comments, but M&M's has shelved
spokes candy. M&M's spokes is what they're calling it. No, yeah, they're calling it spokes candy. Yeah.
Gotta be a bit, right?
Because there is a lot of political discourse around their newest M&M, which we don't talk about politics much.
That's an insane statement to have to say.
There's a lot of political discord around the green M&M.
Where is
you're right though. They've been talking about it a ton.
Yeah.
The Ukrainian president
quote. The Tucker Carlson quote is one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life. Okay, I'll have to. Here, hold on.
I didn't see it.
I'm gonna have to play it over my.
The green M&M.
No, he did a whole segment.
It's too sexy.
Yeah.
But there's one like.
I shouldn't want to have to fuck an M&M
clip. Hang on. I
shouldn't want to fuck the green M&M.
Oh no! Here it is. Because this is it's just unfucking believable.
The green M&M got woke M&Ms have returned. The green M&M got her boots back, but apparently is now a lesbian. Maybe, and there's also a plus-sized, obese, purple M&M. So we're going to cover that, of course, because that's what we do. Woke.
He's just like, we're going to cover that. That's what we woke. Do. And like, it's like he broke character. He's like, fuck me.
This is so stupid. Yeah.
The woke M&M.
But, yeah. She might be a lesbian. There's, by the way, I don't. Well, whoever you want to vote for, whoever you support, whatever you believe in, if you get to a point where you're upset because you can't be horned up by an M&M, you need to start looking at yourself in the mirror a little bit. That's just
take a minute.
That's a problem. But Maya Rudolph is replacing the M&M. Apparently, could be a super. It could be they might be like leaning into it just to like play up a Super Bowl commercial. I don't know.
I kind of think they are.
All that to say, she's very funny in Popstar. She has such a tiny role in Popstar, and every line she delivers as Deborah is amazing.
What's the origin of that name? I believe Deborah. It's so fucking good. All I can think about is that yellow and red M&M fucking each other now. The J.K. Scott. J.K. Scott M&M is definitely a top, and that red one's definitely a bottom. J.K. Simmons, yeah, he's definitely the top.
J.K. Scott.
That's the M&M.
There's so much top, discourse Red. Around it.
This is an envelope.
Right. If you're telling me I don't hear that before a movie anymore, I'll be very upset.
That's true. We cannot lose that. Because that is
the red M&M. Like,
I don't know what.
The red M&M sucked me so
I don't
hard.
Know what I saw.
The red M&M. It sucked me off so hard I had to wipe my ass after.
It might have been Death of Stalin because we saw it at such a weird time in the day and it was all old people. But I remember we saw a movie early on after we like quit our jobs where someone in the audience was just dying laughing at that M&M's commercial.
They loved me.
I
laugh every time. Every time he gets that envelope and he goes, this is an envelope.
What a ripoff of Patrick funny. That M&M is. Because Patrick definitely predates the dumb M&M bit, right?
I don't know. Yeah. Did it?
I think that's so. Like, I remember seeing the animated M&M's commercials in the early 2000s, but like SpongeBob's what, 98? Like
SpongeBob was 99, I think. So,
but when did the first "They Do Exist" commercial come out?
That's
no, I think Yellow predated.
Someone gave me some Super Bowl commercial inside info, by the way, the other day.
Ooh,
because I tweeted out about that. I also got a bunch of people to bite on the Burger King CEO
on Zimmer.
Giving up, people were believing that Burger King gave up 13% of their company for a jingle, which is so stupid. But apparently the CEO was super hyped about that Whopper, 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 that whole campaign.
1996.
And he's so fucking mad that everyone is mocking it. And he's been trying to get their like 1 minute long Super Bowl spot like refunded. Like he doesn't want it anymore. He doesn't want to play the commercial. He's so embarrassed by it.
I would imagine.
That's great. It's such – the only people talk about Burger King for years were me and Ken Jack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now everyone's talking about it.
I feel like this happens every year. Like any commercial that plays a lot during football becomes universally despised. You know what I mean? Whoever has that spot.
I kind of
– yeah.
Dude, it came on like four different times during the game yesterday and I was at a bar and every single time everyone sang along with it.
I kept getting so weird. I don't know if this is regional. I kept getting
different reels and TikToks though.
I kept getting weird Jesus commercials during football for the last couple weeks. I don't know why. Have you guys been getting those?
Yeah, no, me too.
Yeah. Jesus commercial,
it's,
yeah.
It's like it's Jesus, like US or something, and it's like he is him or something. I don't know what it was, but I didn't realize that Jesus had it like that. There's, where he just had commercials for him.
Jesus was him.
Yeah.
There's also this might be a local New York commercial, but there's some sort of like it says like Reformed or something. There's some sort of commercial, and they're definitely making the logo look like the Marvel Studios logo.
Really?
Yeah, it's really weird, but it's like a very serious commercial. I got to figure out what it is. I was like, what the fuck?
The Paul Giamatti one's taken a lot of flack recently too. By the way, speaking of football commercials, the Giamatti one's been eating flack. They hate that one, and like I'm just like, I don't know. It's Giamatti getting a paycheck. I don't have any problem with that.
Well, no, but like that's what makes me sad about it, though, is he's so talented. And it's like, can't we put him in a real project?
Yeah, but he's doing movies. He came up on set for AT&T and did like Verizon and did 20 seconds as Einstein and then just left. I respect that. He wasn't taking away too much of his time.
But it was a little sad, though, right? When the Scrooge thing ended and he was just Einstein, you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, what's happening here?
Get the bag.
What's going on with Paul?
Get the bag, Verizon. Or
Paul, yeah, he definitely going to get the bag. Somebody, we were watching football at work a few weeks ago, and another one of our esteemed coworkers, Frank the Tank, I think he said it. He's like, I think he's getting a divorce. Like, okay.
Such a right, Frank comment. Such a Frank comment.
The Last of Us, episode 2 of The Last of Us. I almost pulled up This Is Us. Very different show.
Yeah.
To rave reviews. People are really liking this show. And I think, second episode, you get the clickers for the first time.
Nailed those, by the way.
They look so fucking good. And they're disgusting. Just fungus is disgusting.
Yeah.
The episode opened up again with a really cool flashback. I hope that's every episode.
That is awesome. Major, and I finally watched Chernobyl. I know I'm an idiot for not watching it sooner, but I finally hopped on that train because obviously Craig Mazin's directing this as well. And that framing device of just setting up at the beginning of the episode, major Chernobyl vibes is what I got.
Yeah, and that's cool.
I
love too, that.
I hope I agree with you, Jeff. I hope they do this every episode.
And that wasn't part of the game either, which is cool.
Have people been complaining yet about the COVID allegory?
No. So this is so pre-COVID. Like the game is so pre-COVID that you can't.
I
know, but
that opening scene. The opening scene of this episode where they're like, "We need to find the vaccine." They're like, "There's no vaccine." I'm like, somebody's going to get upset about this.
Yeah, I'm sure there are people that are going to get upset about it. But I love how that scene specifically gives you more background on like everything that's happening. And like this is what we're talking about with the last episode, where all this shit's happening in the periphery of that main one-for-one adaptation. Like, that was so cool in the beginning. Just a little bit of, like, I don't know, a little more lore into the world. Fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. Really thought that was cool. And that line where she just, like, is despondent, like, bomb everything right now. I'm going home with my family.
She's crying. She's like, yeah, there's no other way.
Yeah.
Like, you have to bomb the city.
That was awesome. Like,
yeah, that's, I think, the big thing is because it's great outside of that. Like, it doesn't need it. No. but it's adding something that makes it not feel so cliche and so cookie cutter for zombie-ish type stuff. I'm not saying zombies have a fungus, but like infected. Those types of shows. Yeah, the infected, because you're adding so much weight to the context of it, where it's just it sets you up and it just tees you off into the episode. Like that was awesome last night. Like you kind of knew the second that first thing you're like, oh, this is gonna be a great fucking episode. And everyone's saying the next one's unreal. Nick Offerman makes his debut. Apparently, episode three is like the epic. I don't know. I think people who got screeners got up to three, so we were like, three is the best one easily. The first two, which that's great to hear because the first two were pretty fucking awesome. But yeah, I mean, Chris is with me. I don't know what happens. So like,
right.
No, like this to me is all, I think it's kind of like the funny, like got to take it with a grain of salt. And I've said that to people. I'm like, look, if you played the game, you haven't watched yet. I don't know how you're going to feel. I didn't know any of this shit was happening. I didn't know she was going to die. Tess, this is all spoilers, by the way, but at this point it's week to week. So just watch it.
Yeah. Dude, Anna Torv, was great. I mean, she was very understated, I think, in the first episode, but this was her episode, and she knocked it out of the park.
They swapped that up a little bit, too, I think, because in the game, I believe she gets killed by raiders in the state house, and they switched it to being killed by...
Yeah, she gets killed by humans.
Yeah, but that was cool. I think they did that same scene really well, because it was a similar type of deal where, like, she sacrificed herself so the other way people could run away. I think they did that well, like, as far as building up... Because, like, you had two sort of things you have to do with this episode where, like, you need to build the rapport between Joel and Ellie, but you also need to build the rapport between Tess and Joel so that you can, like, have the emotional release of when she dies. So, like, that was hard. I think they probably didn't get enough of Joel and Ellie, obviously, but, like, still, I think they built up enough between Tess and Joel where, like, that hurt when she died a little bit. So, they really got some job. And the clickers, I mean, I can't say that enough. It was unbelievable how much they fucking nailed that.
It looks so good. Like the broken down city, the infected, like they hyped up the production coming into this and for good reason. Like the production value is through the roof. Incredible. Very, very great blend of CGI and practical. Also, this episode was Neil Druckmann's directorial debut outside of obviously the video game. And you kind of got that vibe. Yeah, you got that vibe too. Like it felt like it really did feel like the game. Like when they're walking through the hotel lobby, which also looked incredible. It's overflown with like moss and water.
Yeah,
like that was major. Like it felt like you were in the game, which is good, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the big thing is like I know Chris, you've tweeted you really like it. It's like you just don't know. Like, I don't know. Like, I keep being surprised, which is kind of nice. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm a fan of this. Very, very happy with the direction it's going in. Really happy with the performances. And, like, we've watched several shows this year, and a lot of them I couldn't get into. And a big reason for it is, like, this is methodically paced. It's intentionally that way. But, I care about everything that's going on. I really like these characters. I really like, you know, just the side conversations between Bella Ramsey and Pedro Pascal. Great chemistry, just even in the limited interaction between them. And on a technical level, you guys brought it up. It's marvelous. The sound design in that scene where they're getting chased, it's creepy. I mean, there's some really excellent tension. I think having those opening scenes as well, which kind of set up the backstory, only add to the tension. I really do like that in movies when there's like an epidemic or a pandemic and you're just like, you see people be like, this is uncontrollable. Only adds to the kind of urgency of the situation. So yeah, I'm fully on board with it. I'm not like, you know, it's not my favorite thing ever, but nothing is, you know, I think this is one of the best things I've seen in a while. I think it's really, really good so far.
Yeah. I think, one of the biggest compliments I can give it too is like, so me and my girlfriend, she doesn't like zombie shit. She doesn't like video games, any of that shit. We watched the first episode and like a few days later, she's like, I can't stop thinking about The Last of Us.
Yeah.
And like, that's a great compliment to give anything video game related because usually it's so like insider, you have to get shit or whatever. And even then they usually script the adaptation anyway. But the fact that like, non-interested parties can be interested or like engaged with it is great. I also, me and Goose, we were talking about this earlier. Is anyone better at acting with their face than Pedro Pascal? Like that dude, just all he gives you is a look, and it says more than like 100 words ever could.
Dude, yeah. The perfect example of that is when she's about to give herself up and she's like, this is the end of the road for me. And he doesn't even say goodbye. He just kind of looks at her for like, holds it for yeah. like two beats. And then he turns around, he grabs Ellie. He's like, let's get out of here.
Yeah.
Like,
is that how it like, plays out in the game?
I don't think so. I think he says like goodbye, like in the game, like there's it's some very minor quick. Changes
they, like,
here.
They, she has to leave. He has to leave really quickly, I think. But it is similar. Like it's a look thing. If I remember
right. Yeah, it's fucking great. But go ahead.
Back to that sound design. Just one more thing. Like that clicker noise is done perfectly, and it's done perfectly in the game, and they brought it over exquisitely here because like when you hear that clicker coming, they do something so cool where he's like reloading the gun, and you can kind of see the clicker in the background coming towards him, but the camera just keeps zooming in on his face, and the clicker goes out of image. And you can just still hear the clicks getting louder. So you're like, where the fuck is it? Where the fuck is it? And that's exactly how you feel playing the game. You're just like constantly on like high alert. Like you're like, oh my God, something's about to happen. Like anything can happen at any point. Mm-hmm. You just hear those clicks. They're just haunting.
You know who didn't love the show? Ugh. Just in honor of the video game corner. Joe Ballins didn't like the first episode very much. He said he thought it was kind of boring, which is fascinating because he's like the number one video game guy. But yeah,
he'd be there. But he'd again, be there day
that's,
one.
That's the video game thing too, though.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, I think he said.
Like, I feel like that definitely plays a factor.
He did qualify it with that he thought like maybe he thought it was boring because he recently played the game over again, which is fair. That would make sense.
Yeah, I keep kind of saying that because I don't know. I truly don't know if it's like a thing where if you love the show, if you love the game, you may not like. But again, I don't have any. Same with Chris. We don't have an expectation, so it's. We don't know what's coming. Excited for that. Also very excited to see the first pile of shit video game adaption that comes out after this. Like someone who doesn't know how to do it. Yeah. And they're like, oh, look at that. They did it. We got this. We cracked the code. And then they just adapt something good into some trash.
It's going to be, I don't even know.
Netflix has a BioShock coming. There's no shot that's going to be good.
No way. No chance. Well, I guess you can't really count Dungeons & Dragons. There's going to be one like that, though.
It's not really a video game.
Exactly.
Though,
yeah. It's more like just a game.
No. Yeah.
Gears of War.
I just got reminded of the Cowboy Bebop Netflix live action.
Oh man, dude. Ugh. Just a total like nobody understood anything about that series before they really made that adaptation. Oh, Gran Turismo is
almost impressive.
That's right. Forgot about that.
They got the music right and they got what's his face right? That was about it.
Jet. They got Jet well done.
Yeah, they nailed Jet and they nailed the music, but outside of that, I like John Cho, but he was terrible. Spike.
They got
just not nearly charismatic enough for that character.
It's not cool. But they have the Gran Turismo movie coming out this summer, but like that's really like what's the plot for Gran Turismo? It's just kind of taking the name. And then Sonic the Hedgehog came out last year. I guess that's doesn't really count towards the future.
Yeah, but I almost feel like you have to like delineate like live action from animated.
Oh, yeah. They got a Yakuza movie coming out at some point. They got a Splinter Cell movie, a Ghost Recon movie, Space Invaders movie. No, fuck that. That's gonna suck. Why do you even do that?
Dude, HBO's gotta pick up Red Dead.
Yeah.
That's gotta be next.
That Ghost of Tsushima movie's so happening badly. Too. I forgot about that.
That'll be good because Hideo Kojima is actually like
I do wonder if Craig Mazin maybe goes, fuck, do I like
Kojima's no not
like crack the code?
Well, is that
Kojima doesn't do Ghost of Tsushima, but like it would be I think it's Chad Stahelski is gonna be directing it, I think, the dude who did John Wick and a couple other people are involved.
Wait, which games did Kojima do?
He did Death Stranding, Metal Gear Solid.
Oh, that's what I'm getting mixed up.
Yeah.
Wait, there is a Death Stranding game though coming.
Yeah, there is a Death Stranding movie coming. And a game too. I think the second game's coming too. But yeah, Ghost of Tsushima. That's going to suck.
So that is The Last of Us episode 2. We will next up is going to be Plane. But first, our interview with Ryan Johnson. He's got a new show coming to Peacock. It's a Mystery of the Week type show. Comes out with the first four episodes first. Here it is.
All right,
is that a Camaro?
Right, waste no time.
All right, we are joined by someone who actually kind of the inspiration of this podcast. 4 years later. This podcast was a podcast just to talk about Last Jedi theories. Wow. A movie if you can't tell by all of the Star Wars, I don't know if you can see, but I have a lot of Star Wars action figures behind me.
I love it.
Very cool to talk to Ryan Johnson. How's it going?
It's going great. What's up, guys? It's good to meet you.
We have a ton to talk about.
But Poker Face, Peacock, 10 episodes, 4 out on January 26th, because it is Mystery of the Week, so then it's 1 a week after that. But for those who don't know what Poker Face is, Mystery of the Week series following Natasha Lyonne's Charlie, who has an extraordinary ability to determine when someone is lying. She hits the road with her Plymouth Barracuda, and with every stop encounters a new cast of characters in strange crimes she can't help but solve. I don't even think I could read the whole cast of the people who are involved in this. If you thought the ensembles of Knives Out were a lot, now you're doing a show. So now it's even more people. It is an endless, from the Ben Bratz of the world to the Ron Perlmans of the world. It's unbelievable. Is it, though, is it getting hard? How many mysteries and whodunits can one man think up? Like, is it becoming a bit of a challenge?
Oh, God. It was hard at the start, man. It was hard with the first Knives Out. I mean, it's hard, but it's fun. I mean, it also helps that, you know, Poker Face is, for me, it's even though it's also a mystery, it's a very different animal than Knives Out and Glass Onion. And, you know, it's very much kind of a throwback to the TV shows I grew up loving, you know, like Columbo and Rockford Files and Magnum P.I. And but it takes very much from Columbo, as opposed to the whodunit model. It's the how catch 'em model. You know, we show you the murder in the first act and show you who did it. It's not a mystery in that sense. It's then kind of a chess game between Natasha's character and the killer, seeing how she's going to bring them to justice. And I mean, that's fun. And that is also the fact that it's a road show and, you know, taking inspiration from like Quantum Leap, for example, where every single week you were doing kind of like a weird little anthropological dive into a completely different world. And that's something I really wanted to put into this show, was that it's a different town, but also like a different little ecosystem, like in every single episode. So that helps keep it fresh. We'll see going forward. It doesn't feel like the gears are grinding yet. I'm still having fun. And if anything, I feel like really excited for, I've got all these other ideas for like what we could do down the line with it. So the second you see smoke coming out of it's coming out of the engine block, though, just give me the high sign and I'll pull the car over.
Do you like, doing a TV version in terms of like in the mystery world even opened up more ideas, though? Because I feel like when you're making the movie, if the idea doesn't hit, you kind of got to get rid of it, right? Where this one, you can be like, all right, let's push it down. Maybe it's a future episode where you can kind of expand more ideas that may not be fleshed out right out of the gate.
Yeah, 100%. And that's something that I really enjoyed about the TV. And also, honestly, I mean, you know, I worked with a fantastic writer's room, a group of writers, and this is my first time doing that. So I had two really great showrunners, Nora and Lila Zuckerman, who showed me the ropes in terms of how TV writing works. And I really enjoyed it. It was a collaborative kind of effort that I still felt like I was able to go in and like take real ownership over. And the fact that you have to do 10 of them, you can't really afford to get precious. And I liked that. And I liked that you can kind of, you know, throw spaghetti against the wall and see if it sticks. You know, I liked that you can just kind of say, okay, yeah, we'll try this for this. This is a wild swing, but we'll try this for this and then move on to the next one. So in that way, it feels kind of freeing in a nice way, you know?
Like we said, a lot of impressive people in this, comedic, dramatic actors, people who do both. Are you an ensemble guy now? Is that what you are? Yeah. Like, is that a thing? Like, are you just that's what you are?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think so. I you know, Knives Out and Glass Onion are both very much ensembles. And because those movies are whodunits, I think they always will be truly ensembles. This, though, it's interesting. Like, you watch the trailer and you see all those names and it looks like an ensemble. But the reality is that's spread over the entire season and it's the guest star mode. You know, it's something else that I loved about those old TV shows is – I love, you know, like watching another episode and, oh my God, Dick Van Dyke shows up in this one. Oh, holy crap. Johnny Cash is in this one. John Cassavetes, you know, Jenna Rollins. Oh my God. These are not actually ensembles. It's actually, in a way, a two-hander over the course of it. It's for most of them, you know, it's Charlie versus the killer. And that to me also felt, actually kind of important because it's only an hour for the TV format. We're getting these great guest stars in. The fact that I don't have to also service eight other suspects, but I can really give them the screen time to breathe and develop their characters and give them that delicious back and forth with Charlie, with Natasha's character. That felt important.
Did you write with people in mind or did you cast after?
We would do, you know, in the writer's room, sometimes we would just have like placeholder ideas for actors. But sometimes they were like, you know, Fred McMurray type, you know, sometimes they're not even actors who are still alive. We weren't necessarily thinking we would get them. We would just have them in our head. Very rarely did they end up being the people that we ended up casting. I think Nick Nolte may have been one of the only ones where in the room we're like, oh yeah, Nick Nolte type, but we'll never get him. And then somehow we got Nick Nolte to show up for our episode. But Mary Verneuil and Brett Howe, who I also have worked with on my films, they did the casting for the guest stars, and it was a tough process, man. I mean, it was great, and we got an amazing group together, but getting a new movie star every few weeks to come in and do one of these, it was just a lot of casting. And so, but God, man, I looked down the line and I honestly still can't believe that we got the roster that we got.
So this is like your first time in TV for essentially like a decade. And now you're the showrunner. So is it better having that level of creative control, or is it sort of nerve wracking? Because I always think of it in my head. It's like you have it as a director of an episode that you're not in control of. Like you have more of like a micro feel versus the macro, where now more of it's on you.
Yeah, it's a totally different beast. I mean, something like, you know, the Breaking Bad episodes I did, I mean, that was like heaven, because I mean, you're just handed a perfect script and you're working for, you know, some of the best producers with like the best cast in TV, and you get to just come in and kind of do the fun part. At the same time, you know, jumping in and being able to have an idea in my head of something that I really love and that I want to see happen, and then be able to kind of use this big machine to really create that. I mean, look, it's a lot more work, but than showing up in Albuquerque for 3 weeks and just getting to direct cool shit. But it's also, I mean, just insanely worth it. You know, it ended up being just so much fun. And then to come out the other end of it was something that I feel, you know, as proud of as I do of any of my other movies. I mean, that is the whole process. Yeah. It was a lot more intense. It was a whole different process, but also like exponentially more rewarding, you know?
I like that the structure of it is very similar to Columbo. My parents loved Columbo and I'd watch with them. It's kind of crazy how Columbo was coming out as late as like 2003. Like I went and looked, Matthew Reese and Jorge Garcia were in the last season of it.
I know it's bonkers. Jorge, who I went to high school with.
Oh,
we won a high school talent show together.
What did you guys do?
Yes, doing a Rowan Atkinson routine. We were like high school drama buddies at San Clemente High School, where we shot Brick, my first movie. That's the high school we went to. It's so interesting. I watched recently the very last Columbo episode, which was like 2003. It was such a mind fuck, because that's when I was like out of college and hanging out in LA. And so I'm used to watching Columbo and it being like a window into the past of like 70s and 80s LA, which is really cool. And then to watch an episode of Columbo and they're hanging out at Swingers on Beverly with the cow wallpaper on the wall where I spent so many late nights. It was kind of mind blowing. It was so wild.
It's just so weird to think about that in retrospect. Because, again, like you were saying, like you think of the cutoff of like 1989. Like that's the end of Columbo, but then there's just the expanded universe.
I kept going, man. They kept bringing it back. And there were some really awesome – I love that episode too. There's some great later episodes. There's a great one with Lindsay Krause playing like a sex therapist, which is a terrific episode. It's like in the later season. So, yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there.
Gonna have to go rewatch. Speaking of which, how important – is rewatchability to you when you make these mysteries beyond, like obviously with Poker Face and with the Knives Out, like because people, like they go back and they rewatch and they're like, oh, they point out this Easter egg thing or this thing prophesies this thing. Do you focus on inserting that sort of stuff that people will appreciate later?
Yeah, I love that kind of stuff. And I always try and also I'm, you know, just the way and maybe this is kind of a function of the way I write. I always sit down and kind of write very structurally. And so I write kind of zoomed back from the map and kind of figuring out the structure of the whole thing. And I think that lends itself to hopefully building kind of like a density into it so that there's hopefully things to dig into. At the same time, I mean, and this is something that I've tried to get better and better at is you still have to calibrate it for the person who's watching it the first time. That has to be your first priority to make sure that you're not leaning on the pleasure of rewatchability, that is an additional layer to it that is very rewarding and wonderful, but that first and foremost, it works as a dramatic experience right off the bat. And that's always the toughest part, you know?
And what's interesting too about all that, like the things that you pick up on the second watch or third watch, how many of those things for you are either A, like an accident, like you didn't really mean to do that, or just not a thing you thought about? Because like I've already seen it. I'm sure you've seen it. You did a Star Wars movie and all universes in terms of like little things in the background. How many of those things do people bring up to you or you see online that you're like, that's not even really what that is, but I guess it was.
It's a combo plate because there's definitely those things where people – that's also why when I do like a Knives Out, like a Glass Onion or Knives Out, I never have to worry about putting red herrings into it because I know people are going to find their own. But there's definitely – that does happen. But also, I mean, you know, I because of the way that I write stuff, there's a lot of stuff that I do spend a lot of time thinking through and baking into it. And things that people never find, you know, things that I doubt people will ever find.
Is that frustrating when you have one that you included and no one ever finds it?
I mean, I always try and fight the temptation to point it out because like you don't want to be that guy, but it also feels though a little bit like, oh, there's this hidden gem in there. And also I do believe like as it goes that nothing ever stays undiscovered for too long. So I know down the line and then whoever discovers it will feel that much cooler about it that it hasn't been found. But yeah, with Poker Face, like deliberately in the first act, where Charlie is not in the first act, thinking very deliberately about where we hide the hint of how she's going to fit into the episode, like things like that. I don't know. It's fun to kind of bake into it.
We mentioned Knives Out. I got to talk a little about Knives Out before we go here with you, but I got to bring up one thing. You've been asked so much about it. You've probably answered every question under the sun, Glass Onion as well. Do you think you made an egregious mistake addressing the Muppets thing? Was that like, cause now that is just going to,
it's just life of its own.
Your quote almost was like, I'm putting this to bed quote, but you know, it wasn't, it's going to be doofuses like me who bring it up now forever.
That's all right. You know, I love talking about the Muppets. I'll always take an excuse to talk about the Muppets. Are you kidding? I'm friends with Frank Oz, man. I'll always talk Muppets after dark.
You've got to be thinking about at least putting a reference in the next one, right? Or a future episode of the show.
Fueling the fire, just spraying gasoline on the fire, putting out fire with gasoline. No, I mean, you know, everything that I said in my completely failed attempt to put it to bed still applies. I also think it's a really super fun idea. I get why it's fun, but I also look, I mean, the thing is, I would love to just direct an actual Muppet movie someday, you know, and to do, whether it's a mystery or something else. And that's what kind of my yes, but kind of boils down to is I do think that fundamentally, you know, the Muppet movies have their own tone and their own rules, and those don't really line up with Benoit Blanc mysteries. I think my buddy Connor then posted, well, the thing to do is to direct, to make it like an old school episode of the Muppet Show where it's the variety show and it's behind the scenes and Benoit Blanc is the guest that week. And that would be like the way to approach it.
I do like that. I love that. As a big Muppets guy, that I like.
That's the way to do it. Yeah. Yeah.
We want to do something with you. We just call it a six pack of questions. The six questions, varying amounts of difficulty. So love to see where you go with some of these.
Oh boy.
You directed what I would say one of the most misunderstood episodes of Breaking Bad, The Fly, and then I think also the most universally loved episode in Ozymandias. Which one, though, was actually just more fun to make? Because I would have guessed The Fly in a landslide.
Well, it depends how you define fun. I mean, Yeah, I mean, I guess The Fly was technically more fun because it was just a concentrated thing, and I just got to be in this intense situation with Brian and, you know, Brian and Aaron, and whereas Ozymandias was an incredibly intense experience. But the way that I define fun, the kind of masochistic way I define fun in terms of the depth of the experience I had, I can't beat Ozymandias. Like, that was a life experience that I'll take with me to the grave. So yeah, it depends on your definition of fun. I'd say Ozymandias was definitely the bigger emotional experience for me.
Where do you think your life takes you if your name was spelled Ryan with a Y?
Oh boy. I probably would not even be alive today. Let's be honest. When I turned 12, my parents gave me the option to change it back. Wow. 'Cause it's not like some deep reason they did it. They just found this alternate spelling in a baby book. Mm. So they gave me the option to switch it back. And I was like, no, I like Ryan. So
I think everything worked out in the end.
Yeah. Sorry.
has there been a movie that you were in the running to direct, really, really wanted, but just ended up not getting?
No, I've never really had that experience, but I've also, because I've just, with the exception of Star Wars, which was kind of just because of its place in my life, was kind of an offer I couldn't refuse. I've never really worked that way of getting like offers and accepting offers. I kind of also always just figured out what I wanted to write next and kind of made that. So, I've never really gone out pitching for jobs. I don't really have, I've dodged that specific heartbreak, I guess.
Gotcha. Is there a non-classic movie that you would like to remake? So I'm not saying go remake Gone with the Wind, but like for me, I was just watching Twins yesterday. I'm like, I wouldn't mind a Twins reboot. Let's see a Twin somewhere, you know?
I mean, one of my favorite films is Sleuth. Oh, they did remake that.
Mm.
Yeah, that's right. Kind of remade that. So maybe not Sleuth. God. I don't know. I mean, I feel like any movie that's like a true classic that I absolutely adore, I don't know why I would remake it. You know, it's like, I guess there's an element of ego of just like kind of, you know, peeing on it and marking it. But other than that, it's like, if I love it, like, why would I want to fuck it up, I guess. So,
yeah. What's an existing property you would like to get your hands on for a new movie? If that makes sense.
Oh, that's very, very interesting. I mean, this feels like I'm dodging all these questions, but the honest answer is because I've never adapted material before. I've never like started with a book and then adapted it. And I think part of why that is if I love a book or a graphic novel or something in another medium besides cinema, typically what I love about it is what's not translatable in my mind easily to cinema. And so when I read something that I love, the last thing on my mind is how can I make this into a movie? To me, that's almost like finding a pair of boots I love and thinking, how can I knit these boots into a great sweater? You know, it's working in a different way for me that kind of, that I would feel like I would have to break that in order to make it into a movie. So, in terms of like properties or adaptation or whatever, what is more interesting to me is something that I truly love, thinking and boiling down to the abstract essence of what I love about it, and then creating something original that tries to capture that. So that's kind of more the mode that I that tends to kind of like, you know, turn me on with making stuff.
Mm-hmm. Last question, and we're going to pre-pat ourselves on the back here. We've become the first podcast in history to ask you a Star Wars question. What does Daniel Craig smell like? It's an important one. It's
a big question. Very
it's an important question.
He smells like a pleasantly groomed Wookiee. Oh, we got back around to Star Wars. You lose. You lose.
You screwed us. Damn it. That's the Guinness Book of World Records right there. Just ruined.
Oh, you were so close, man. It was the last question. You almost made it.
We're such big Last Jedi guys, too. That was so bad. That was fucked up.
I'm sorry.
That was just. Thank you so much, though. If you're ever in New York or we're in LA or somewhere, we'd love to talk to you for even longer.
This is a great conversation, man. I really appreciate it.
Well, appreciate that. Just on Brick, man. I mean,
you were the inspiration of this pod. So that
I love it.
Last Jedi. So it's cool to get to talk to you 4 years later, however long it's been. But dude. Poker Face, Peacock, first four episodes, January 26th, and then one a week. Thank you so much, man. We appreciate it.
Jeff and Jack, appreciate it, guys. Take care.
See you. Thank you. All right, time for playing. Cool. 2023 movie. Starring Gerard Butler with a great character name.
Yes. Brody is just Brody such a great Torrance. Name. Brody rocks. Ugh, fuck, I'm trying to think. Brody Kennedy Mike just Colbert. Doesn't work. I just need to take that out of any potential baby name for the future. Brody Kennedy. Too many E's at the end of that. Brody Lowe. Brody Gooch, that works.
Just yet.
Brody Castellani would be the funniest because it's the most confused name of all time.
Yeah.
I don't know. Plain is interesting. Here's the plot summary. I'm going to read it off Wikipedia too because it's a meaty plot summary. Commercial pilot Brody Torrance makes a successful emergency landing after his plane sustains critical damage from a storm. He soon realizes that the island he's landed on is Jolo, a fucking remote. What do they call it? A remote area of the Philippines, ruled by a heavily armed anti-government militia. A local militia leader finds the passengers and takes them hostage, tends to secure large ransoms from their families. With international rescue experts struggling to find their location and running out of time, Brody is left with no choice but to free a convicted murderer, again played by Mike Coulter, who many people would know from Luke Cage, probably most mainstream-wise. He was tasked with transporting and team up with him to save the pastor and find a way off the island. It sounds like all the plane movies that have ever come out mixed into one. It doesn't feel like it's as B movie as it should be.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about this movie. It's getting pretty favorable reviews. It's got like a 75% critic score. It's got like a 90 something audience score. It's for me fine. Like it's just fine. Gerard Butler is not always, but usually pretty solid in these. He fits these well. I think if this was somebody else who maybe, like, if this was like a Liam Neeson, I think I might like really fucking hate this movie. Like, Butler can typically make the role that he's in with these types of movies like pretty enjoyable and likable. But this is just, I don't know. This is like not really my thing. Like, it just wasn't. This needs to be so much more absurd. It just wasn't remotely absurd enough. Like, I wanted so much more. And I think – and maybe that was my – maybe that was my, like, expectation that was set because, like, our coworker saw it first and kind of warned us about that. They're like, oh, it's not as well as we thought. But I just wanted this to be the most ridiculous – maybe not Snakes on a Plane ridiculous, but, like, I just wanted something more over the top, more ridiculous, more, like, less believable. And it just didn't cross that line.
Olympus you're looking fallen, for
Olympus
yeah.
has fallen. Yeah.
Right. Honestly, yes. Which Robert Downey Jr. recently said was like perfection to Gerard Butler or something like that. He's like, we need more of these movies. But honestly, Olympus has fallen is kind of what I expect. And this was like, it was crazy, but it's like not, it's not that crazy. I don't know. I just didn't really care for it. It's not like my favorite thing. It was fine. It was fun. Yeah, I don't know. It's not bad by any stretch, and I kind of wish it was. wish it was bad. Enjoyable though. Fun time. I'm actually going to give it the same score we just gave a movie recently. I'm going to give it the same score as I gave Otto, 66. Enjoyable, fun action movie for what it is. Have it one below The Pale Blue Eye. By the way,
yeah, big stink, big bore.
Tough one from Bale. Yeah, really boring.
I thought he was good. I thought he was good in it.
No, they're fine.
Yeah, you tweeted that and you followed up. You're like, okay, I just finished it. Not that good.
Yeah.
Just a bore.
Anyway, I don't know. I'm like, I don't know. Like, I'm the kind of like, just, I was like, eh, whatever. A lot of people like it though, so I don't know. Maybe I'm off base here.
Not really thrilled.
Ken so. Jack.
So I gave it a 70 out of 100. I think it's like with Otto, I said like it's the most 65 of all movie of all time. I think it's like the most 70 movie of all time. And I think like you were mentioning like Fights and Robbie, they saw it ahead of us and their description did really fit the movie best. It's just like, it's not what you expect. It's just not as ridiculous or fun or as like the Has Fallen franchise, but also it's just like not a bad action movie. So like it's hard to explain it, but like, it's almost like it's disappointing, but it's not. It's not disappointing because I wanted it to be that, like you were saying, but also it's not disappointing because like, it was just, it was entertaining as in its own action way. And I think they even pitch it this way, very 80s and 90s style of action movie. And on the acting side, like it's tough to really judge many acting performances based on just like the general idea of this movie, but like, it's Butler's movie more than anyone, and everyone else is just kind of there. And I appreciate how they didn't try to force him to be an American. They're just like, fuck it, dude, you're just do whatever, yes. Do be you, man, be you and do you.
Yeah.
And they fit everything else around that. So I like that. The action was cool, especially like that first big hand to hand fight where like they kind of stay on Butler's face while they like, he's doing the fight with the big mercenary dude, or no, it wasn't mercenary. I guess what a militia, whatever you want to call it. Like that fight was cool. Yeah. The gunfights worked, like especially when the Merc showed up with whatever that gun was crazy. But yeah, so like it's just a very easy 70. I like that it wasn't too long because that would have killed this movie in its tracks if it was like a, you know, fucking 2.5 hour, 2 hour plus type of deal. But like, good length, good action, Gerard Butler's solid, and it's just, that's it. It's not one I'm going to take home with me and be like, wow, this is one of the better undersung action movies like of the last couple of years. So like, no, it was just solid watch. Entertaining. You're looking for something to watch, I would recommend it for that. If you're looking for something better, there's definitely better options available.
I think I might like this the most out of all of us, which is rare. It's not memorable at all. And as I've gotten away from it, I probably like it a little bit less, but some of the things that you guys are saying as complaints, I actually view as positives because I think with a lot of these, I'm tired of action movies being so complicated. I'm tired of them having a basic premise and then they go into complete absurdity. There's a bizarre subplot. The movie runs an hour too long. Like this is like, it very much felt like a throwback to like the very simple 80s, like Schwarzenegger action movies, like basic premise,
yeah.
Basic premise, guy goes out, kicks ass, you know, for whatever reason, this pilot has an armed forces background and he's, you know, going out and beating the shit out of people. I liked that. Like, I that's all I need. It's a January action movie. I don't need convoluted plot structure. It's a basic setup, basic characters, and like, you know the way it's going to go. But I thought the action was pretty slick. And yeah, I agree with you. I think Gerard Butler is really good in this. In fact, there's a moment near the end, like the very end, where I'm like, is he going for like the fucking Oscar with this? Like, he's really good trying. I would like to see him because he's kind of, I mean, we like him as an actor and he seems like a nice guy. He's chosen a lot of shit. I mean, talk about a guy who's had a weird, bad agent. Like, man, has he picked some weird projects. Go ahead.
Has he picked weird? I feel like he's picked stuff. I feel like he's built his own brand.
Well, I just think he never really stretched. He did a bunch of romantic comedies early in the 2010s. Yeah. What's that?
And they were good. He's a good rom-com actor, I think. Bounty Hunter?
Well, no, he's a likable
actor. Yes, I love you.
You like the Bounty
Hunter? Bounty Hunter is a solid rom-com. That's exactly what a rom-com should be.
I got to come clean. I kind of like The Ugly Truth.
See?
Never what's saw his that.
What's his best movie?
Law-abiding Citizen.
Rom-com or just best movie overall?
Law-abiding Citizen, maybe?
Best movie overall.
The 300.
Yeah, I guess like as far as cultural.
Not counting relevance. How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah.
The Machine Gun Preacher.
Machine Gun Preacher, solid. I mean, Law-Abiding Citizen, I think, is the singular movie of his I like the most. It's not like that's the number one Gerard Butler performance, I guess, but I fucking love that movie.
I mean, Has Fallen.
I mean, Den of Thieves.
I'm a big Den of Thieves.
Den of Thieves is definitely up there because his character rocks.
Yeah.
Give me more pep, though. And his name is like Nick. His name is so funny. What was it we were talking about on Long Take 2? It was like Nicky Big Boy Mitchell or some shit. It was something really funny. Fuck, I forget.
Someone, I don't have the time to pull it up, but someone said he has like built his own genre of movies, which is dad movies for people who aren't even dads.
Yes, exactly.
Which is like, I mean, sure, why not?
Oh, you know what I really like? Rock and Roller. That's a really good role for him. I think that might be my favorite role of his. He rocks in that. Great cast too. Guy Ritchie banger.
Big Nick O'Brien was the name of
Big
that,
Nick O'Brien. Character. That was it. Damn. Give me the Pepto.
But back to him for a second, though. I wanted just to bring this up because we talked about this with Colin Farrell a few weeks ago, where it's like they went the movie star route and now they're kind of just taking projects they want to take as opposed to ones they feel like they need to. I'd like to see him do that. Like maybe he could have that kind of resurgence because I thought he was really good in this. So, yeah, it's just I kept waiting for the movie to bore me. I kept waiting for it to get stupid. it's, I mean, it's completely cliche, but I was just, I don't know. I was okay with it. And I appreciated the fact it was legitimately brutal.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't, I like the R rating. Like I like that it wasn't overly sanitized. So, yeah. And, I give any plane movie, I give it credit when it captures how fucking claustrophobic planes are.
Yeah.
Like a lot of them just had like, but like spacious wide seats like this, or like United 93 do a great job of like knowing like, no, the plane's a fucking giant sardine can 30,000 feet in the air. So, yeah, 74 for me. I like this. I mean, this is, I don't know what's going on with these January movies, but, they're better than I expected.
That's a fair point. This has been pretty solid for January.
Yeah.
I wonder, and this is, maybe this is just hope. I do feel like maybe the last 2 years, COVID has affected so many movies that like maybe we're finally out of that. Like, and I just feel like we're going to get better premises and better scripts and like actors more willing to take on certain roles. Cause I mean, Megan and Plane were two movies I circled like, well, you can put these in my bottom 10 at the end of next year. And I've liked both of them. So yeah, maybe that's a sign of things to come.
Shout out to Plane.
I didn't see this movie.
Oh, you didn't?
I was going to decide whether or not based on your reviews. And to be honest, this feels like I need to wait until it hits streaming. So yeah, I can like.
I have a take. I don't think you ever need to watch this movie.
It feels like something I'll flip on hungover one like Sunday afternoon during the summer.
Great effect.
I don't think you ever need to see this.
This is such a TNT movie.
TNT or FX?
I need to
get
to the theaters. So
yeah.
There's nothing else in theaters, so I might just do it. Like
you, that is true. So well, you taught me the thing's coming out soon.
Women talking. Yeah, right. Like I'm gonna see that.
No way.
Teen Wolf the movie that's just on Paramount Plus. There's nothing really. The next real like big theater release is Knock at the Cabin from M Night, which I already read what happens in that because I read the synopsis of the book.
Come on.
Good, bad.
How are you going to read through an M. Night twist?
It looks bad. I think it looks bad.
I'm teetering every time. Dude, I teeter. I'm like, one day I'll see it, and I'll be like, this is going to be good. And then the next day I'll see it.
I will never learn my lesson on M. Night Shyamalan. I will.
By the way, Aiden for Brady is going to go crazy in terms of like memes and shit.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to have a social moment because it kind of already is. It kind of is popping up here and there. People are like kind of laughing at it. 80 for Brady. It's just,
Do you know if Kirk is going through with that plan to rent out a Boston movie theater for?
I don't know, but we're going to be at the Super Bowl that Ben Scott saw that week. I may have to go see it. Magic Mike's Last Dance.
That looks bad. That looks really bad.
Apparently,
I don't hate on the Magic Mike franchise.
Apparently, there's like a 10-year sex scene. Like all the hell out there.
Well, the last one was such a downgrade from the first one. Self is awesome, and the second one was just such like sequel garbage. Not garbage. It was. I don't want to call it garbage, but it was just like such a step down because the first was like legitimately really good. I'm giving it a pre-0 out of 100. Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. We've been surprised by a lot of horror movies this year.
Fathom Events. So you can go see the opera on the opera telecast to a big screen. Winnie the Pooh.
Secret Life of Arrietty. I wouldn't hate this movie so much if they didn't like this trailer came out for the Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. And then like five more of these movies got announced. Like, they're doing like all the little fairy tales.
Yeah,
like,
that's so fucking stupid.
Aesop's Fables.
They've been doing that for a while now, though.
One would be fine, but like we don't need it for everything.
It's just some guy who just found out what like public domain means. Yeah. Now he thinks he's so edgy and cool. It's like, stop.
What was the name of that one that they did? I think it might have just been called Red Riding Hood with Amanda Seyfried, where they tried to make like there was like a Twilight ripoff of. Where it was she was Red Riding Hood and fucking Gary Oldman was in it.
That's right. Wow, what a callback. That's one that zero cultural relevance is in ear one out the other.
Well, that was that era where we got so many Twilight wannabes, which I mean Twilight's a fucking wannabe, but we got that, we got Beastly.
Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters.
Mortal Instruments. Yeah.
Mortal Instruments. Wait, Mortal Instruments.
Immortal Engines is what you're Mortal thinking
Engines.
Of.
Yeah. Mortal Engines.
With Peter Jackson banger.
Peter Jack, produced by Peter Jackson.
Yeah.
Divergent.
Right.
The
steampunk baby.
All the YA movie adaptions are just, for the most, I would say like 99% bad. Like, so bad. Like, you'll get like one good Hunger Games movie and then 500 terrible other things.
Yeah.
Wasn't the last Divergent movie released on like DirecTV or something?
Yes.
You know, wasn't ABC Family or Freeform? Like they said it was, or which is now, I think it's now Freeform. Yeah.
All right, that's it. That is it. Plain, whatever. I don't know what we're gonna do. I don't know what we're gonna review next week. The FC, like, we'll just see kind of what's out, and it's a weird release window right now because in the summer it just heats up or ways away. So that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, HelloFresh, for Ken, Jack, Chris, Gooch, I'm Jeff Tilo. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Stella Blue Coffee's new can lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations, so when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. All new Stella Blue coffee can lattes now available at StellaBlueCoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.